So we are not doing a verse from Bhagavatam today, but we'll be reading his Pranati Mantra first, and we'll spend the remainder of the class discussing the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So please repeat after me. Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Satchidananda Namine. Gaurashakti Swarupaya
Gaurashakti Swarupaya
Rupanugavarayate
Rupanugavarayate
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Satchidananda Namine
Satchidananda Namine
Gaurashakti Swarupaya
Gaurashakti Swarupaya
Rupanugavarayate Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Satchidananda Namine
Satchidananda Namine
Gaurashakti Swarupaya
Gaurashakti Swarupaya
Rupanugavarayate
Rupanugavarayate
Namaha. Obeisances. Bhakti Vinodaya. Anto Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Satchidananda Namine. Known as Satchidananda. Gaura. Of Lord Chaitanya. Shakti. Energy. Swarupaya. Unto the personified. Rupa Nuga Varaya. Who is a revered follower of Srila Rupa Goswami? Te, unto you. I offer my respectful obeisances. Please repeat. Unto Srila Satchidananda Bhakti Vinod, who is the transcendental energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Before we proceed with his life story, we would like to sing a bhajan which has been composed by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. In fact, Bhakti Vinod Thakur composed so many poems and bhajans during his lifetime, and they have been compiled in books called Geetavali, Sharanagati. So we will sing today from Geetavali. The bhajan is called as Shri Nama, and we have a few copies. Others can access their smartphones and kick ass. So. Gai Gora Madhur Swar Ek Yal Me Kalor Ek Sun Kick Ass. Then you can pass it to the Prabhujis, they might need.
Krishna
Lord Gaurasandhe sings in a very sweet voice, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Whether you are a householder or a sannyasi, constantly chant Hari Hari. Don't forget this chanting, either in happiness or distress. Just fill your mouth with Hari Nam. You are bound up in Maya's net and forced to toil fruitlessly. Now you have attained full consciousness in the human form of life, so chant the names of Radha Madhav. Your life may end at any moment, and you have not served the Lord of the senses, Rishikesha. Take this advice from Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Just once, relish the nectar of the holy name. So we can see that Bhakti Vinod Thakur has written such beautiful bhajans. They were his personal ecstasies. And he was one of the most prominent acharyas in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Why he was so prominent was because he was responsible solely for, first of all, finding the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And not only that, he is also credited with reviving the whole Krishna consciousness movement. So he was a spiritual leader, and he was also an ideal grahastha. Especially for grahasthas like me, he is like an exemplary spiritual master in a disciplic succession whose life can be definitely followed. He was also a district magistrate for a long period of his life. He was a preacher, he was a prolific writer, and he was a poet. As we read one of his songs, he was a very good writer and a poet. So before we delve into the details of Bhakti Vinod Thakur's life, it is very important to understand why Bhakti Vinod Thakur appeared and what were the circumstances surrounding Bhakti Vinod Thakur's appearance. So actually, he appeared in the early 19th century, and the circumstances prevailing in the early 19th century were such that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis, and also even Swarup Damodar Ramanand Rai, and after that the three Goswamis who came, like Shyamanand Pandit, Narottam Das Thakur, and Srinivas Acharya, all of these had disappeared, and there was a dark age which had descended on Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Hardly 350 years had passed since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone, but the pure teachings of Gaudiya Vaishnavism and the essence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings were completely lost. And what had contributed to this loss were three sections in society which were there in the early 19th century. The first section was the ruling British. So British rule had already started in India at that time. So that was the first section which opposed or which created obstacles and which was responsible for the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being lost. The second section which contributed to this loss or to this dark age on the Gaudiya Vaishnavism was the Indian intellectuals of that time and the social reformers who were there numerously present during that time. And the third section which contributed to this dark age were the upper sampradayas which sprouted up after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the six Goswamis left. There were so many Sahajyas who came up. So Sahajyaism was very strongly prevalent when Bhakti Vinod Thakur was born, and so many upper sampradayas had sprouted up. So let us understand how these three sections of society contributed to the downfall of Vaishnavism in its purest form. So first of all, the ruling British, who was there in the early 19th century. Now, as you know, in Facebook also that message many times circulates that before the British people came to rule over India, they had sent one of their envoys, or they had sent one of their agents or a governor or someone to travel the length and breadth of India and give the Britishers, go back and give them an idea how to conquer this country. And that person had written, that speech is recorded, he had written that, you know, I have never seen a culture which is so strong and which is so proud of its heritage. I can't see one beggar on the street during that time before the Britishers came to rule. So the Indian culture was so strong before the Britishers were ruling over India. And this person wrote back to the king and to all the people who were planning to come into India. He said the only way this country, which has a rich cultural heritage, can be conquered is by breaking it at its root level. Completely break down the culture, because the culture is so strong over here that it will be very difficult to conquer these people. So completely break down the culture, make them feel guilty of their own culture and inferior about their own culture, and brainwash them to think that everything British and imported is actually the true thing. So this is what he wrote back, and this is how actually the Britishers came and ruled over India. So in the early 19th century, there was a famous governor called Thomas Macaulay from the British ruling India. And he had said, he was a very strong proponent of completely kicking Sanskrit out of Indian schools. So he said that we will first of all remove Sanskrit from Indian schools, and we will introduce only English as the medium of language for education. So he wrote also, he said that no Orientalist can deny that a single shelf of good European library is worth the whole native Indian literature. This is how he was promoting that how Indian literature is completely useless and it is not even worth one shelf of European library. This is what he promoted. So they completely, first of all, denigrated Indian culture. They removed Sanskrit from schools. And what they also did was they denigrated the Vedas and the scriptures. And they called the Indian people as completely sentimentalists who just believed in idol worship. And especially they attacked Lord Jagannath's worship. They used to call him the horror juggernaut or something like that they used to call him. Or the Indian Moloch. A Moloch is someone who keeps extracting service from others. So he said they used to call Lord Jagannath like that. So these Britishers, they completely ruined the Indian culture which was present. They completely ruined the Vedic scriptures. And they actually succeeded. To a large extent, they succeeded in doing this. And they spread only British culture in India and only English as the language of study in India. And they made Indians believe through their education system that all these Vedas, all these scriptures have no value. And only whatever has been imported from British, from the Western culture, that is the true culture which you need to now imbibe. And most of the Indians started imbibing that culture. In fact, people who started imbibing that culture were also called as Macaulists, because Thomas Macaulay was the one who promoted this in India. So these opinions were absolutely not at all helpful for Vaishnavism to stay and to flourish. Because people started looking down upon their own culture when the Britishers brainwashed through the education system like this. So this was the first section, the ruling British, who completely destroyed the Vedic culture in India. The second section which was present during Bhaktivinod Thakur's birth were the Indian intellectuals. These Indian intellectuals had been educated in the British education system, and they had been made to believe that your Vedic scriptures and your Puranas, like the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, these are nothing but a collection of mythological stories which never existed. All these things were never there, and they are just mythological stories created to bring out some sentiments in people. And this is what the Indian intellectuals used to believe and they used to propagate in the early 19th century. So they completely lost faith in their own culture. These people had completely lost faith in their own scriptures as well. And they were not adhering to any form of scriptures. Forget about Vaishnavism. And what happened was, because of this, there were so many social reformers who sprouted. And they thought that it is now their duty, because these Vedas and all these things are just mythology. So they thought it is their duty to create the real culture in India. So they started fusing. They started a fusion movement. They took some parts of Indian culture and they started fusing it with Western culture or Christianity. And one of the most famous reformers at that time, before Bhaktivinod Thakur appeared, was Raja Ram Mohan Roy. So Raja Ram Mohan Roy promoted what is known as Brahmoism, and he established what is known as the Brahmo Samaj all over India. And they were completely Mayavadis, they were completely impersonalists. No deity worship, that it is all idol worship they used to say, so there is no idol worship required, and they just promoted Mayavadi philosophy. But this Raja Ram Mohan Roy's philosophy, this Brahmoism, it became very famous with the youth of Bengal. Because Raja Ram Mohan Roy was from Bengal. So it became very famous. It was a hit. So many youth of Bengal started following Brahmoism, and these youth Brahma Samaj societies started sprouting all over Bengal and all over India. So this was the second section which contributed to the downfall of Vaishnavism in India. And then the third section which contributed to this dark age on Gaudiya Vaishnavism was the Apasampradayas or Sahajyaism, which sprouted up. So all these sampradayas have sprouted up with spurious ideas of their own and spurious philosophies, which were completely bogus. They started promoting sentimentalism and just emotional behavior. So they started imitating Rasleela, like, oh, we are following the highest tattva, which is Radha Krishna's Rasleela. And they started imitating that Rasleela prematurely, and they used to have illicit sexual relations with so many girls, thinking that they are following Rasleela. And they are following the highest tattva of Radha Krishna worship. Also, these people, because they were themselves sentimentalists and there was no basis of philosophy, they used to exploit the innocent Indian people at that time. So they used to count, they used to bank on the sentiments of people, and they used to cheat them of their money. So all these things were going on when Bhaktivinod Thakur appeared. And because these apasampradayas were there and so many spurious philosophies had sprouted up, the elite Bengali society, or the educated and cultured Bengali society, they had completely lost faith. They were shocked and disgusted, because these Atta Sampradayas, not only were they doing all these, but they were doing all these activities in the name of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. They used to proclaim themselves as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So all the educated Bengali people, the cultured Bengali people, they completely lost faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They thought that he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy was for lower class of people, for people who do all these activities, who do Rasleela and who do illicit sexual relations in the name of Rasleela and who just cheat and exploit people. So this was the third section which contributed to the downfall of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the early 19th century. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared at during this time, and actually he had to contend with lot of opposition from all these three sections when he was trying to establish the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is mentioned that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur started reviving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, it was so difficult for him to find even one bona fide copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because he wanted to read Chaitanya Charitamrita and he wanted to re-establish whatever Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has said and whatever were the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it was extremely difficult for him to find even one bona fide or one true copy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this was one of the reasons for his appearance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt very compassionate seeing the downfalling condition, because just 350 years had passed, but everything was lost in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So taking compassion on these conditioned people, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually sent Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was an eternal trusted associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he sent him to revive the Krishna consciousness movement and to save people from all this confusion and condition the nature of life. So he appeared at a very historical juncture, a critical historical juncture, to illuminate the dark sky of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, because everything had become so dark about Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So this was the reason why Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in the early 19th century. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent him just for this reason, to completely oppose these three sections and to re-establish his teachings. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born on 2nd September 1838 in a place called Bir Nagar, and this is in present-day Nadia district in West Bengal. His parents' name were Ananda Chandra Datta and Jagat Mohini Devi Dasi. So he was the third son of his parents, and he was named as Kedarnath Datta in his childhood. And it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was practically born with a silver spoon in his mouth, because both his father's side and his mother's side families were wealthy millionaires. So they had huge estates, huge village, land to their name, and so many hundreds of servants in their houses. So he was almost born with a silver spoon. But it is mentioned that as his childhood progressed, both the sides of his family fell into poverty. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to actually go through a very difficult childhood and youth. He did not have a very nice childhood and youth in terms of material facilities and even in terms of physical health. His health kept failing during his childhood. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was such a prolific writer and such a prolific poet that his talent could be seen even at the age of 2. So it is mentioned in the 7th Goswami book that Bhaktivinoda Thakur composed his first poem at the age of 2, at such a young age, and which showed that what is there in the future for Bhaktivinoda Thakur. At the age of 6, he started learning the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, and he could recite all the stories and shlokas from Ramayana and Mahabharata. Then at the age of 9, he started researching astrological texts, He used to go and study along with one of his cousins. He used to go and study under a guru who used to teach them astrology. And very, very meticulously he studied astrology. And then at the age of 10, he also started reading spiritual texts. And he started taking interest in spiritualism. So in fact, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born, his grandfather had also predicted, and in his horoscope also it was mentioned, that he will become a great Vaishnava one day and he will be very famous. That had already been predicted in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's horoscope. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was extremely fond in his childhood of plucking ripe fruits, because they had huge estates during those days. So he used to run around and pluck ripe fruits from the trees. But someone scared him, one of his aunts told him that, you know, there are ghosts in the trees, so you have to be careful. And he could also hear sometimes these ghosts, because usually we have heard that ghosts take shelter of trees. So he used to get very scared and he ran to his mother. And he used to ask her that, I'm very scared of this ghost, but I want to go and pluck fruits from the trees. And his mother advised him. She said that if you chant the name of Rama, then all these ghosts will go away. And that is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. He adhered to that instruction so well, because there was natural devotion. Obviously, he's a devotee. So he adhered to that instruction throughout his life. Whenever there was a fearful situation, he would chant the names of Lord Rama. And all the ghosts or whatever fearful situation was there in his life would go away. So we see that since childhood he had this spontaneous attraction to chanting the holy names of the Lord. Now as he became older, in youth Bhaktivinoda Thakur started studying. Like, he was sent to a British school and he became very good in English language and even in Persian language. He was very strong in languages. So at the age of 14, his uncle, who was the famous literalist, like he was a famous writer of that time, his name was Kashi Prasad Ghosh, he had come to visit Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family, and he was really impressed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing skills and speaking skills in English. So he said, I'll take you back with me to Calcutta, and I will, because this Kashi Prasad Ghosh had a newspaper, like a weekly editorial, which was called as Hindu Intelligence. So he said, you write for my newspaper. And he took Bhaktivinoda Thakur with him, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the tender age of 14 was already contributing articles to the Hindu Intelligence newspaper. And not only he stopped there, he continued writing on so many different subject matters, on so much of literature he was fond of, English literature, that he kept writing on those subjects. In fact, he also wrote a 2-volume book, full books, called as Poriad. And this was based on the life story of Porus. I think Porus is one of the characters in history who had met Alexander the Great. So he wrote this 2-volume book called Poriad. In his youth, that means he spent a lot of time writing on English literature. And also when he kept growing, like around his 17 and 18 age, he started dabbling with different philosophies. So he started dabbling with Raja Ram Mohan Roy's Brahmoism, the impersonalist philosophy. And he was actually quite impressed by it. He was quite inspired by this Brahmoism for some time. So he dabbled with this philosophy. Then he used to do comparative study of different religious texts. So he also started reading the Bible and the Quran. And for a long time he did this in his life, in his youth, doing comparative religion study and, you know, trying to find out which religion is the best. And in these youthful days, he concluded after reading the Bible that Christianity is superior to Mayavadi or Brahmoism, where they actually promote impersonalism. Because he said that in Christianity, at least they believe that there is an eternal God who is existing. And that is something which inspired him. So he said that no, Christianity is at higher, one level higher than this Brahmoism or this Mayavadi philosophy of Raja Ram Mohan Roy. So when we read this and we try to understand this youth pastimes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it is extremely easy to misunderstand his life. And actually some scholars have done that. They have misrepresented Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life when they study this youth part. So they say that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually a conditioned soul. Because all in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life history, it is also mentioned that he got married at the age of 12. You know, in India during those days, there were child marriages prevalent. So he got married at the age of 12 to a young girl who was 5 years old. Although they don't live together as soon as they get married, they live separately and they only get together when they are adults. But the marriage was already done when he was 12. So many scholars have portrayed that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was just a conditioned soul who got married at the age of 12, who was very attracted to English literature. In fact, it is mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to regularly lecture in the British Indian Society. And he was very applauded for that because he was a very good speaker. And he was training the Britishers. One of the Britishers used to come to Bhaktivinoda Thakur to take lessons on public speaking. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so famous for his speeches which he used to give in these societies. So when we see these scholars actually misrepresent Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, they say that he was conditioned and he was so attracted to English literature that he was keeping on writing, wasting his time writing all these books. And also because he was inspired with Mayavadi philosophy for some time. So he was actually an impersonalist for some time. So these scholars claim that he was actually a normal conditioned soul, a jiva like all of us. And then slowly his consciousness evolved and then it reached to advanced levels of consciousness where he accepted Vaishnavism as the real path of life. Otherwise, during his youthful days, these scholars mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was confused about what is the real path of life. And this is actually absolutely bogus, what these scholars say in some of the books which they have written about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Prabhupada also said that one of Prabhupada's disciples called Madhusudan Prabhu, he actually wrote a letter to Prabhupada and he said that I have read a book about Bhaktivinoda Thakur where in his youthful days, now this disciple must have read the book which some scholar had written. So he says that in his youthful days it is mentioned Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very inspired by impersonalism. So was Bhaktivinoda Thakur an impersonalist for some time, Prabhupada? Like that Madhusudan Prabhu has asked Prabhupada in one of the letters. And Prabhupada wrote back to him. He said that no, Bhaktivinoda Thakur at any stage of his life was not a conditioned soul or was not confused about the real goal of life or what is the true path of religion. He said that, and in that letter Prabhupada compares Bhaktivinoda Thakur with Arjuna. So he says that Arjuna is actually an eternal associate of Lord Krishna. He is a friend of Lord Krishna. But he showed himself to be conditioned for some time on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken and so that he could play a part in a very important pastime which was to happen. So that was the purpose why Arjuna was showing himself to be conditioned. And he said that if Bhaktivinoda Thakur has done something like that, he is just playing a part in an important pastime. So whatever Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing in his life, in his youthful days, it was actually to suit the time, place and circumstance. But we should always understand that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, Prabhupada said that he is the eternal energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a Nitya Siddha devotee. So he was never a conditioned devotee like us who have, you know, come here because of our karmas and we are now trying to purify our consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a Nitya Siddha, an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had been sent to achieve a purpose in this world, which was to revive Krishna consciousness and re-establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings in this world. So very important not to misunderstand Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life when we read all these, his youthful pastimes especially. And where Prabhupada also gave a comparison of his life to one very famous personality from Chaitanya Charitamrita, who is none other than Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So today is also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit. So Gadadhar Pandit can be best glorified through the pastime of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Now Pundarik Vidyanidhi's life was also such that someone can easily misunderstand him. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a pure devotee of Lord Krishna and he had come to visit Nadia. And when he was there in Nadia, Mukunda, who was very fond of elevated Vaishnavas and he knew the glories of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So he took Gadadhar Pandit with him to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Whenever all these elevated Vaishnavas would visit, because these saints keep travelling all over India. So whenever they would visit Nadia, Mukunda used to take Gadadhar Pandit to visit all these saints. So on this occasion he took him to visit Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And when young Gadadhar Pandit came with Mukunda to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he saw that Vidyanidhi was surrounded in very opulent conditions. He was actually dressed very opulently in silken robes and he was lying down on a couch which was made of fine cotton and all silks were spread over it. And there were some servants who were standing and fanning him with chamara whisks and all. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi was smoking that hookah pipe which royalty smoked. And Gadadhar Pandit was absolutely shocked in his mind. seeing the appearance of Pundarik Vidyanidhi and seeing this activities of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And also it is mentioned that in between, Pundarik Vidyanidhi used to pick up a mirror and keep looking at his reflection to see how he is looking. And Gadadhar Pandit was, since childhood, it is mentioned that he was just born one year after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was almost Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's age. So while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Nimai, was very naughty, mischievous, he used to pull the Vaishnava's legs. He used to keep challenging people in grammar. But Gadadhar Pandit, although he was a close friend of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was completely the opposite. He was absolutely serene, calm, peaceful. He never used to like such pastimes of Nimai. So he used to stay away when Nimai used to do these things. And in fact, Nimai used to challenge Gadadhar Pandit. He used to say, one day I am going to become such a great Vaishnava that you will never leave my association. He used to challenge him that. So Gadadhar Pandit was a very naive brahmachari at that time. And when he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi behaving in this way, he started having doubts in his mind about Pundarik Vidyanidhi, whether he is a good, pure devotee or whether, you know, he is a devotee at all. He started having these minds. And immediately Mukunda could sense, who had taken Gadadhar Pandit there, he could sense that these doubts are going on in Gadadhar Pandit's mind. So what he did was, he recited one of the verses from Bhagavatam. And he recited the verse about Putana, I think, where Krishna delivers Putana, I think, Ahobasiyam Sthanakala Putam. I think that verse Mukunda recited. And as soon as Mukunda recited that verse, Pundarik Vidyanidhi went into complete ecstasy. All the Ashtasattvika Bhava started manifesting in his body. So he completely lost control of himself. He fell down from that silken couch where he was sleeping. He started tearing things to pieces. He was not at all in control of himself. He started throwing things around. He went into so much ecstasy when he just heard one verse from the Bhagavatam. And we hear verses daily from Bhagavatam. So Gadadhar Pandit saw these ecstasies which were manifested in Pundarik Vidyanidhi. In fact, all his servants had to control him, and still they were finding it difficult. He was in so much ecstasy after he heard that verse. And as soon as Gadadhar Pandit saw that, he immediately felt so guilty and in his mind, and he started repenting that you have done a great offense to a pure Vaishnava, because he could judge that this is not any sahajyaism. He has actually gone into ecstasy hearing the verse from Bhagavatam. So he felt so guilty in his mind, and so much repentance was there in his heart, that he expressed to Mukunda that I think I have done a big Vaishnava prad by misjudging this devotee just from his external situation. So I will, for repentance, what I will do is I will take initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And Mukunda was so happy at this decision of Gadadhar Pandit. So he actually next day takes him, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi also embraces Gadadhar, that where can I get such a disciple, and he gives him initiation. So we see that even Pundarik Vidyanidhi's external life circumstance was like that, where actually he can be misunderstood. And same thing scholars have done about Bhaktivinod Thakur's life. They have misunderstood and misrepresented his life in many books. So people get completely swayed, thinking that he was just a conditioned soul who actually became, like, he was a sadhana siddha. Through his sadhana he came to know what is the true goal of life. But that is not the truth. Bhaktivinod Thakur is an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So once he started on the path of devotional service, he had so many numerous achievements. Bhaktivinod Thakur, he wrote so many books. It is mentioned he wrote hundreds of volumes, re-establishing the lost teachings of the six Goswamis and of Lord Chaitanya. And he composed so many poems, he composed so many songs, he wrote so many articles. There was a magazine he started called Sajjana Toshini, where he used to regularly write about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure teachings. So once he started on the path of Vaishnavism, there was no looking back at all. And this happened during his work life. So after his education was over and he dabbled with all these philosophies, Bhaktivinod Thakur started looking for a job, because then his wife had also come to stay with him. So the first job I think he did was a teacher. He became a teacher in a school, and he was also a principal for some time. He also worked as an accountant in a sugar factory. So he did various jobs, and then he was taken as a clerk in one of the high courts. And then he became the deputy district magistrate in one of the courts. So like that, his career in the law industry kept going ahead. And then he was appointed as the magistrate. So during this time, his work life, when he was the magistrate, he came in contact with lots of devotees. And when he heard from these devotees, they were all Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And when he heard from these devotees that about the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also started reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when he read Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was shocked to see, to hear that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is declaring Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he had heard all those mayavadi things, Krishna is just a person who came and needed all these, sometimes all these activities which are questionable. So he was thinking, how can the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu call Krishna as the Supreme Lord? But he was so, his heart was so touched by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings that he actually humbly went and prayed. And he deeply prayed that I want to be convinced about these teachings, so you please help me, my Lord. He deeply prayed and then he kept further reading the Vaishnava texts and he was convinced. He was first of all convinced that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also the Lord himself who came as a devotee, and he also got convinced about Vaishnavism, that Lord Krishna is the Supreme and Vaishnavism is the goal of life. So once he was convinced, there was no looking back in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. He was absolutely like, you know, raring to go. He wrote all these literatures, he preached, he used to go door to door preaching. And he is the one who is responsible for establishing Namahatta centers all over Bengal at that time. And not only that, he used to send books abroad also. So Prabhupada actually writes in his one of his letters, he said that because Prabhupada was born in 1896, and that was the year when Bhaktivinoda Thakur first sent a book on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to, I think to London or somewhere. So Prabhupada says that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent in the year I was born, and Prabhupada found it quite significant. As a significant event, that books on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went out when I was born and then I was sent to spread the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing vigorous preaching to re-establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And not only was he vigorously preaching through books, that means through words, but even through his actions, he was showing how Vaishnavism is the highest and any upper sampradaya or any sort of Sahajyanism should be cut down completely. So during his time as a magistrate, he was the district magistrate in Puri, Jagannath Puri. That time in the nearby village, in a forest, there was a person called Bishkishan. So most of us have heard of this pastime. This Bishkishan was actually a mystic yogi. He had some mystic powers and he had long matted hair which used to go till his knees almost. And he used to claim himself to be Mahavishnu. So he used to tell his followers, he got quite a few number of followers because he used to do all these mystic siddhis and he cured many people of their diseases and he did some miracles in some people's lives. So he had a huge fan following. And he used to claim to his followers that I am Mahavishnu who has descended from the milk ocean to deliver all of you. And he further, because he got such a big fan following, he started further exploiting these people. So he said that now I'm going to do Rasleela, like Krishna does Rasleela. And he used to actually exploit the girls of the local village. And when some of the respectable Bengali people saw all these things happening, that he's polluting our chaste girls of the village by doing Rasleela and then obviously doing further activities with them, they all went and complained to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They said that you please take action. This person is claiming himself to be Mahavishnu and in the name of God he's doing all these illicit activities. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had already, you know, started preaching Vaishnavism. So he was very furious when he heard that somebody is claiming himself to be God. So he immediately took the police chief of Puri and he went to that forest where this person's ashram was. And as soon as he entered, because of his mystic power, Bishkishan said that I know who you are. I know your history. And he actually rattled off Bhaktivinoda Thakur's history, his name, even before Bhaktivinoda Thakur had introduced himself. And he told Bhaktivinoda Thakur that I know why you have come, but you please be convinced that I am Mahavishnu who has descended from the milk ocean. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was outraged when he heard this. He said, no, you are not Mahavishnu, you are a rascal. Because if you are Mahavishnu, any incarnation or any appearance of the Lord is mentioned in the scriptures. And nowhere it is mentioned that during this time an incarnation is going to appear. So we know completely that you are bogus. So you please give up all these activities. And but that fellow kept claiming, no, no, I'm Mahavishnu, I'm Mahavishnu. So he was not ready to give up his activities. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur had him arrested and he put him in jail. And while he was taking him to jail, this fellow actually cursed Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this Bishkishan. He told Bhaktivinoda Thakur that if you do this to me, please remember that I can completely destroy your family, you and your family both. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was absolutely fearless in this. He said, you do whatever you want, you go into jail. But actually Bishkishan did that. As soon as he was put into jail, Bhaktivinod Thakur's child fell sick. And so sick that she was about to leave her body. She was having such high fever, delirium, she went into all that. But still Bhaktivinod Thakur did not release him. And then all these fan followers, they started doing morcha, they started rallying outside the prison of Bishkishan, and they started, please release him, like that. They started putting pressure on Bhaktivinod Thakur, but again, Bhaktivinod Thakur did not relent. So then the court case started, because they had to establish what all activities, wrong activities this fellow had done, and how he should actually be kept in prison. So when the court case was going on, actually this Bishkishan did some mystic yoga on Bhaktivinod Thakur himself. So Bhaktivinod Thakur also fell sick. This yogi was so powerful that Bhaktivinod Thakur got high fever, he got dysentery, he also went into delirium. And he could not even get up from bed, he had become so weak. But despite his ill health, he still came to the court to preside over the case that was going on against this Bishkishan. And he actually declared that no, he is guilty and he should be put into jail. But during that time, one of the police constables, like one of the police who was also there in the trial, he had read that these yogis usually keep their powers in their hair. So while he was standing in that court, he actually got a pair of scissors. They had planned it out and kept. So one of the fellows handcuffed this Bishkishan, and this police constable got a pair of scissors and cut off all his hair. So as soon as he cut off all his hair, this fellow lost all his powers and he almost fell down dead over there, and he had to actually be carried in a stretcher to the jail. So this was the power of Bhaktivinod Thakur, not only through his books, but even in his actions, he fearlessly tried to completely eradicate Sahajyaism and re-establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And also we will touch upon two more aspects of Bhaktivinod Thakur's life. Bhaktivinod Thakur is famous as the most efficient time manager. Now I know in Kali Yuga all of us are extremely hard pressed for time. Whether we are in the ashram or whether we are grahasthas. You know, we have our services, we have our household duties. Always we are hard pressed for time, juggling between different duties, finding time for our sadhana, and always on the run. But Bhaktivinod Thakur's life was extremely exemplary in this matter. So it is mentioned, his daily schedule is given. Bhaktivinod Thakur was the magistrate. And he was such a famous magistrate. He was not like, you know, we might think, oh, during those days, what must be happening? It was not as bad as now. So I'm sure there must not be much that Bhaktivinod Thakur had to do in his workplace. Bhaktivinod Thakur was an extremely famous and efficient magistrate. And he was so much liked by the British government. It is mentioned that magistrate is the highest position any Indian can achieve. And that was given to Bhaktivinod Thakur. And the British government liked his services so much and his efficiency so much that they had built a special railway from Bhaktivinod Thakur's house till the court. And if you go to Godruma, you can see that railway which is going from Bhaktivinod Thakur's house to the court, just so that Bhaktivinod Thakur can travel comfortably to the court. So he was such a famous magistrate and his services were highly valued by the British government. So as a magistrate, he would usually come home around 6 or 7 p.m. Then he would come home and take prasad. This is his daily schedule. He would come home and take prasad, and always there were guests coming to his house because he was famous. So he would preach to them. Every evening he would do some preaching work. Then he would go to take rest at around 8 or 9 p.m. And he would be back awake at 10 or 11 p.m. That is the time he used to wake up. And we see from Prabhupada's life, when we read Prabhupada's life story, we see that Prabhupada as a grahastha was following in Bhaktivinod Thakur's footsteps. So we see from Prabhupada Leelamrita that Prabhupada also used to do that. Prabhupada used to be awake the entire night translating the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He used to wake up at 12, and on his dictaphone, many disciples have said, we could see light under his room door and we could hear his voice. Prabhupada sitting and translating books throughout his night. And this is what Bhaktivinod Thakur used to do. He would wake up at around 10 or 11 and then he would write books. Write. He wrote more than 100 books, as I mentioned earlier. And then at around 4 or 4:30, he used to write, and then he used to sit down for his japa. So I don't know how many of you all have visited Godruma Dweep in Bhaktivinod Thakur's house. It's called Swananda Sukhada Kunj. And over there is one room which you can go and see. It's up the stairs on the topmost level of the house. It's a small room. It might not even be more than 3 feet wide and maybe around 10 feet long. And completely dark. There are no windows, nothing in that room. and just one door, and that was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's japa room. Even in that room, Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to put a cloth over his head and chant japa. Such intense japa Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to do. So at 4 or 4:30 he would go there and he would do his japa for around 2 or 2.5 hours. Then approximately at 6 or 6:30 he would go to take some rest, because he has been awake the whole night. So that too, very little rest. Then he would write, he would do correspondence, because as a magistrate he had to do a lot of correspondence, and also as a preacher, many devotees, many people would ask him questions. So he would do correspondence for exactly 30 minutes. And then there would be again guests. In the morning also guests used to come to visit Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he would advise guests, he would do counseling, he would do some preaching at that time also. And after that he would read from Shastras for 1 hour. And all this is before he is going to work. Huh? He has just gone to, 6:30 he must have taken rest. He has risen, done correspondence for 30 minutes, talked to guests. And then for 1 hour he used to sit and read Shastras every day. That was his study time. And after that he used to walk on his house veranda. And he used to meditate on what he has read. Continuously his mind would be churning, what he has read from the Shastras. And after that he would do maybe for 30 minutes or so. Then he would read prasad. He would eat prasad, spend a little time with his family. And at 9:45 sharp, he would leave for his office. So between 6:30 when he, finished his japa till 9:45, he has achieved all this. His rest, his reading of 1 hour, correspondence for 30 minutes, talking to guests, advising them, spending time with family, eating his prasad. And he has already left for office at 9:45. So that at sharp 10 o'clock he can start his magistrate duty. And from 10 to 1 he would work. And it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so efficient in his work that what others would take hours to solve, other judges would take hours to solve a case, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because his consciousness was completely clear, very crystal clear thinking Bhaktivinoda Thakur had. So in 5 minutes he could solve cases. He could immediately judge who is right, who is wrong, who is guilty in this case, and he would give a verdict and the case would be solved. And he would never go wrong in that verdict, because of his crystal clear thinking. So he was so efficient. 10 to 1 he would do his work. 1 o'clock he will go back home, have prasad, take a little rest, and 2 o'clock he is back in office. And again from 2 to 6 or 7 he would work, and then again that same cycle would continue. So he was famous, actually he was famous all over that place for his efficient time management. And he was famous for being a person who would not waste a single moment of his time. Somehow or the other, the entire day was designed, or he had scheduled his day in such a way that he would spend it only in Krishna consciousness or doing his duties as a family man. That is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was such an efficient time manager, and so much we can learn from his life when we hear about his, especially his time management skills. Also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very good father. Now, we are talking about his grihastha aspect. He was a very good grihastha. So when we read his schedule of his, time, the way he used to manage his time, it is not that he was neglecting his family or he was neglecting his children. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife's name was Bhagavati Devi Dasi, and together they had 10 children. So, we might think, oh, maybe he didn't have children, that is why he was able to do so much. As grahasthas, we might think that he didn't have to spend time. But he had 10 children, and he and his wife together had raised all these children in a completely Krishna conscious atmosphere. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was looking after the physical, spiritual, emotional, psychological well-being of each and every child. None of his child was neglected by Bhaktivinoda Thakur or by his wife. Bhagwati Devi Dasi was completely supportive of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his preaching activities. She also had the same mood. She was also an elevated Vaishnava. So she had the same mood of preaching as Bhaktivinoda Thakur had, and raising children in Krishna consciousness. And one of the sons, illustrious sons of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is none other than Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the Guru Maharaj of Srila Prabhupada. So before Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's birth, Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually had prayed to the Lord, because he saw that, all these sahajism and all these things are going on. He was trying, but he also prayed to the Lord that you please send a special soul who can further do this work of preaching and cut down all these bogus philosophies that are there. And he prayed for a ray of Vishnu to appear, and that time Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born. And therefore Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is known as a ray of Vishnu. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was an ideal grahastha, And he has written also in one of his songs that when I come home in the evening from my work and I see my entire family engaged in worshipping you, O Lord, and when I see my house being used for your worship, I feel that my house is none other than Golok Vrindavan. And I feel that my family members are just your servants. They are not my wife, my children, but they are actually your servants. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to say, and even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, that if you are able to deliver your children, then you can even have 100 children. You can have hundreds and hundreds of children, if you are able to deliver. And every child of Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a devotee of the Lord. This is how Bhakti Vinod Thakur raised all of them. Doing his magistrate's duties, doing his grihastha duties, plus raising his children in nice Krishna conscious atmosphere and ensuring that they become nice devotees of the Lord. So he had led a perfect life, and it is so exemplary for all of us to follow his life, whether we are grihasthas or we are brahmacharis or brahmacharini. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Guru Maharaj was Vipin Bihari Goswami. He took Diksha from a person called Vipin Bihari Goswami. Now yesterday also Jagannath Ram Prabhu was mentioning in the lecture that, you know, there is about Diksha and Shiksha, like about initiation, when it is mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj took initiation from Sukadeva Goswami. And Sukadeva Goswami did not have a formal spiritual master. Vedavyas Priya, his father, was his natural spiritual master because he taught him the Bhagavatam. And that time the point of, you know, how much importance should be given to Diksha and how much importance should be given to Siksha was brought up. So actually Bhakti Vinod Thakur is that link in a sampradaya where we can come to know that Shiksha is more important than Diksha. So we see in the Guru Parampara, we can see Bhakti Vinod Thakur, after Bhakti Vinod Thakur it's actually Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, if you read even in the Bhagavad Gita, the Guru Parampara. But Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was not the Diksha Guru of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. That was Vipin Bihari Goswami. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur had completely surrendered to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's instructions. So he used to regularly take Shiksha. In fact, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was called as Shiromani, Vaishnava Shiromani. He was the crest jewel of Vaishnavas at all times. So even when Bhakti Vinod Thakur rediscovered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace, because everybody was calling Mayapur, that when Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to live, they were calling that Mayapur as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur had doubts about that. When he had read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he had understood that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace was not on this side. I think that was on west side. But he had read that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace was on the east side of the Ganga. And he was having doubts whether that could really be the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which people were claiming at that time. Because he saw that the general people in that area were not interested in Krishna consciousness or Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So he had his doubts, because if the Lord had appeared, obviously that place should be having pious people or devotees in that area. So one day when he was sitting in his house and he was glancing to the other side of the river and one of his sons was with him, he could see a sudden light on the other side of the river and like a temple, as if, you know, that light is illuminating a temple. And he could see people from every caste, religion, country dancing together as devotees. And he was so surprised to see that scene. And his son, one of his sons called Kamal Prashad, I think, was present. He could also see that scene. But there was a clerk who was present at that time. He could not see the scene. And both Bhakti Vinod Thakur and his son were surprised. And they said that, yes, we could see that scene where, you know, devotees from every caste, country, religion are dancing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pleasure. So next day morning, Bhakti Vinod Thakur then took a ferry and he went to that place. And he was somehow convinced that maybe that is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he saw this scene, this divine vision. So when he went there, it was completely covered in tulsi plants, that area. And he thought maybe this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because it has been completely covered in tulsi plants. But just to reconfirm his decision or just to get it validated, because if he claims, if people don't believe, then, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace will be lost. So he invited Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was his Siksha Guru. And at that time, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was already 120 years old. He could not even stand. He could hardly sit. And his eyelids were also closing. So even if he had to take darshan, he had a servant called Vihari or something. He had to actually open his eyelids and give. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj did not even have strength to even open his own eyelids. But he was still alive. He was still chanting and immersed in the holy name. So he thought, yes, I must invite Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj to validate whether this is really Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And actually, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj could not walk, his servant carried him in a basket and brought him till that place. And as soon as Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was brought to that place, suddenly he got the strength, he jumped out of the basket and he started dancing. And he started singing Mora Gora, something like that. He started dancing, singing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's names. And he was in so much ecstasy, he was jumping up and down like a young boy. Although he is 120 years old, he was jumping like that, dancing in ecstasy, because he knew this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is the true place where Nimai took birth. And then Bhaktivinod Thakur was completely convinced that, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj has also revalidated the point that this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And then he constructed a temple for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even to construct that temple, he did not have much money. So I remember he used to go door to door begging for one rupee. And he used to say, because he wanted everyone to contribute, everyone to get that piety, that spiritual piety, that bhakti unmukhi sukriti. So he went door to door and he collected one rupee. Whatever, if someone gives more, it's okay, but at least minimum one rupee he collected. And he was so humble. See, he's a magistrate, but still he is going like this door to door. He would feel so awkward to go like this to collect money, but he was not at all like that. He went door to door, he collected money and he built a temple on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. So these were some of the contributions of Bhaktivinod Thakur. He disappeared on the most auspicious occasion of Gadadhar Pandit's disappearance day as well. And Gadadhar Pandit is none other than Radharani in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. So he disappeared in the year 1914 on this most auspicious occasion of Gadadhar Pandit's disappearance day. And in his spiritual form, in the eternal pastime of Radha and Krishna, Bhaktivinod Thakur is Kamala Manjari. That is his spiritual form in the Golok Vrindavan. So we'll end over here because it's almost 8:55, and we will see if there are any questions or comments. Or corrections, or someone wants to add some points about the Bhaktivinod Thakur.
First of all, compliments to you, such a nice description you have given. Punditji Vidyanidhi is also Radharani's father, isn't it?
Rishabhani. Thank you for having
that. And he used to farm beetles and